Vegas, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe.
That old fire. Hopefully we're lighting a fire under you here with this show around issues as diverse as ending the bombing of Yugoslavia, ending the harassment of our own refugees, our own internal refugees, the homeless in Santa Cruz, ending the drug war. These are the themes I'm interested in, and of course also a more positive vision for the future here in Santa Cruz. We're looking to set up some alternatives. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear, Robert Norse. 2.5 hours coming at you. And we have some special interviews today, one with the hunger striker, or faster, down at the post office, who has been taking no food, no solid food, for the last 15, 16 days. Actually, I guess it'll be 17 now. And he has concerns about the services, or lack of services, at the Homeless Service Center. He's a homeless person concerned with bringing public attention to it through denying himself food and a kind of a spiritual political statement, if you will. A similar statement by Jane Immler back in 1985 actually resulted in the opening of the first cold and rainy night shelter in Santa Cruz, the Cedar Street shelter, which was open for 1 year, a drop-in shelter. I think she fasted for 33 odd days. Then the next year, on a second fast, when she was joined by activist Linda LeMaster and others, they were successful in opening up the River Street mini shelter, as I called it, or River Street shelter, as they call themselves. It was a mini shelter because for a number of years they only provided 2 beds, count them, 2, for homeless people, out of a total of, I guess, 14 until they expanded it. The rest were for, quote, mentally ill designated people. Anyway, fasting and hunger striking. Since the city council doesn't seem to respond to reason, maybe it will pay more attention to overt suffering on these issues. It hasn't even put together its homelessness task force, the Crone task force, or task force. Not that one has any particular hope for that task force, given the disastrous results of the sleeping ban task force and the sort of dawdling approach of the Crone's Crapper Commission, as I call it, Councilmember Christopher Crone's bathroom task force. But the fact that it isn't even on the front burner as the fall, or I should say the spring, hits us without any shelter for homeless people other than 28 spaces for the 500 to 1,500 homeless we have in Santa Cruz, it's quite an indication of what's really going on. A little bit rushed this morning, getting it together here, and so what I'm going to do to sort of give myself time to prepare is to play you an interview. I just had a lengthy interview with the Reverend Wiley Drake of Buena Park in Southern California. Drake is a fundamentalist Baptist minister who some of you may know and have on your shit list for essentially pressing the Disneyland boycott in order to protest Disneyland's policies and the corporation running Disneyland, its policies in terms of opposing so-called family values, as Wiley Drake sees them. One of the main concerns he had, or one of the concerns he had, was providing benefits for domestic partners who are gay. And he's of course a big fundamentalist who believes that gay is a life choice and you know, a fundamental sin and so forth, and that kind of crap, of course, I have no sympathy with. But other things that Drake is doing, I think, are right on, and you're going to hear about those. We've talked about these in past shows, namely standing up against the government as it attempts to close down his own homeless shelter in Buena Park, apparently the only homeless shelter there, if he is to be believed. So let's listen to that tape, and if you have comments, you please give us a call at 427-3772. 427-3772 is our studio line. It's going to be open. I'm going to be in and out, so if it rings without my answering it, just try again. Keep trying. We're also hoping to have interviews with attorney Kate Wells to follow up on the interesting case that you may have remember we talked about very briefly. It actually came in on Thursday night and during our last show. A homeless person charged with a sleeping ban crime, a failure to pay the fine for a sleeping ban crime after he was found guilty. The judge threw out the warrant, in essence sort of agreeing that you can't prescribe jail for a person under an infraction like a sleeping ban, that that's not permissible alternative there. And we're going to be covering that. We're also going to be looking into getting the update from community activist Phil Baer. And Phil has got lots of stuff to say about the war, stuff to say about SCAN, the Santa Cruz Action Network, the organization that brought us the current gang of clowns that's on the city council, as well as other subjects of pressing interest in the beach flats. We talked a bit last show, or the show before, about the Dolphin Lee Project, which apparently is bulldozing plan number two for the beach flats, the new and improved bulldoze and evict the Latino plan under the excuse or pretext of improved housing, affordable housing. So all that's going to be coming down the pike, but first let's tune in to Wiley Drake and hear what that fundamentalist preacher is doing in Southern California and what is being done to him.
We're on the line with the Reverend Wiley Drake in Southern California in Buena Park. Hi, Wiley.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm okay. Police are not about to invade my house tomorrow.
Well, they're about to invade our church here. They wanted to invade it one other time because they were accusing us of miscounting and hiding people. God forbid we should dare hide someone in a church so they could have a place to sleep.
So these police are looking for high-profile rapists and murderers, fugitives from justice, right?
Yeah, like homeless and sleeping on the street, violating a no-camping law.
So in other words, what you're saying is that police are going to invade the sanctuary of your church in search of America's own refugees, the homeless, sort of like Yugoslavian soldiers and paramilitary are accused by NATO of doing in Yugoslavia of Albanian refugees.
Well, it's retaliation, because here's basically what happened. Over a year ago, Buena Park Police Department did indeed enter our facility without a warrant and without probable cause. And we waited for a whole year. We simply asked them for an apology, and we wouldn't file a case. Waited till the statutes of limitations almost ran out to the day. Then we filed a 1983 civil rights lawsuit. In retaliation for that filing of that lawsuit for them coming on the property illegally in the first place, they went to the judge then and asked the judge if they could indeed come on a evidence-finding investigation into our church.
Well, isn't that kind of strange, Wiley? I mean, if you were hiding people there, wouldn't they be gone by the time the police arrived on a specified day? I mean,
of course, they're not doing it trying to accomplish anything other than harassment. They know that we have taken a stand that we will not allow them to violate the sanctuary of our church. We have allowed them to come on property and count heads, i.e. to see how many people we have sleeping here at night.
That's because you were judicially ordered, what, about a year ago?
Right.
To only have 50-odd people there? Or?
We were put on probation for 3 years, and in that informal probation, we could be violated for probation if we exceeded 52, and so they kept coming in hoping that they would catch us violating the 52.
Now, you're making a lot of money off these people, right? This is a mercenary activity where the church is getting all kinds of funding for the homeless people. It's kind of a commercial enterprise, right, Wiley?
No, not exactly. In fact, we feed them 3 meals a day and give them a place to sleep and a place to take a shower and help them find work.
And how much do they pay you for this service?
Zero.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is we give them money from time to time as we have it, simply so they can ride a bus to work rather than have to walk to work for those that are working. And so as we get bus passes donated or dollars donated for bus rides, we do indeed give them money. So it is a negative flow at best.
How many other homeless shelters are there in Buena Park?
Zero.
And how large is Buena Park?
75,000 people.
And Buena Park is what, a sort of a suburb of Los Angeles?
It's a suburb of Los Angeles. It's not in the Orange County area. We're in what's referred to as the entertainment corridor. We're just 5 miles up the freeway from Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also have Knott's Berry Farm and Movieland Wax Museum and Ripley's Believe It or Not and several other places here in town that are tourist attractions from all over the world. And of course they do not like us to have these unclean homeless people in their entertainment corridor.
So how long has, and the name of your church is?
First Southern Baptist Church of Buena Park.
How long has the First Southern Church, Baptist Church of Buena Park been taking homeless people in, apparently in violation of the, city codes or something?
Right. For about 10 years.
And so, and I understand then what was the city's response to this?
Well, for 6.5 or 7 years, there was no response other than during a flood time when not only homeless people were put up in our church, but we put up some people that were in an apartment building that had to be evacuated. And the city, indeed, about 2 years ago, gave to the pastor, myself, Whitey Drake, and the First Southern Baptist Church a certificate of commendation for our being willing to put up people during a disaster time, i.e. El Nino flood.
Mm-hmm.
And then almost a year later, they then charged me with criminal misdemeanors because I had put these homeless people up because their emergency obviously wasn't great enough.
So the misdemeanors they charged you with actually went to trial, right, Wiley?
They went to trial. They started with 11, and 6 of those 11 were dropped because they were accusing us of having done some work in the past without permits. We did not have copies of those permits because we didn't keep them. It happened 20 years ago. And the city said, well, they couldn't find theirs either. And then a city employee notified us that if we would look on a microfiche number so-and-so, we would find them. So we found those. My wife accused them of being on Hillary's desk, but
mm-hmm.
You found those permits in the city files, and then they subsequently dropped 6 of those. That left 5 criminal misdemeanors, basically having to do with not a violation of codes. We're in a proper code for what we're doing, but violation of use of the building. In other words, we converted a recreational building into a food storage and food distribution without the city's permission.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that we were found guilty of was when someone would come into our church parking lot and sleep in their car at night, the city said we had to evict them, we had to make them leave. And if we would not make them leave, which I refuse to do, then I would be in violation of a city ordinance of allowing people to camp in my parking lot.
And the response of the media to this, the brouhaha surrounding your trial and I guess your conviction?
Well, the media has responded very well. In fact, we've gotten very positive. You know, the media just can't believe that the city is still picking on this poor little church. We're a church less than 100 people in membership, but we have a large ministry. We minister to about 400 families that aren't homeless. They're just poor people that come here and get bread and clothing and food. And we give away automobiles, all automobiles that are, you know, basic transportation vehicles that people donate to us. We give away campers and you know, everything, really, and to people that are poor. And but the city doesn't like that.
Mm-hmm. So a jury found you guilty, but the judge refused to send you to jail, but instead put the church on probation?
Well, he did two things. He put the church on probation, and he gave me 1,500 hours of community service. But he commuted that and said, you've already done far more than 1,500 hours helping the homeless, so we'll discount it as time served.
And the name of this judge was?
Prickett. P-R-I-C-K-E-T-T.
But that didn't end this saga. That happened, I guess, a year and a half ago?
Yeah, that was about a year and a half ago.
And what's happened since?
Well, and since that time, of course, they have continued to harass us. They've continued to stop people. We even had one lady that was that had gotten back on her feet. We had gotten an automobile for her, and she was stopped at a red light, and a Buena Park police patrol car rear-ended her. And he got out of the car. It didn't do much damage. It was just a hard bump from the rear. And he got out of the car and came around and said, let me have your driver's license, you know, registration and proof of insurance, which she had all of that. And he called, because he was involved in the accident, he called an independent crime investigation, and they investigated the accident. She's not heard anything from it. At that scene, he never said, I'm sorry, my foot slipped off of the pedal, I don't know what happened or anything, gave no excuse, no reason, just filed a report and left. And we've... you know, my son was in a minor fender bender in town where it was just, like I said, a minor fender bender. And 10 days later, he gets a ticket in the mail from the Buena Park Police Department saying, after more thorough investigation, we're issuing you a citation for failing to yield on a left turn.
Mm-hmm.
They do checkpoint Charlie's here in town where they stop people under the auspices of a driver's license check. And when they check you for automobile insurance, registration, anything else they can find. And they're towing a lot of vehicles doing that because someone's license may be expired on their car or their driver's license may be suspended or whatever. And so they're towing a lot of vehicles. Well, I was out protesting that one day because I believe it's illegal and I don't believe it's constitutionally correct.
Have you become a member of the ACLU here, Wiley?
Not really.
What are your fellow Republicans going to say?
But I was out there protesting it, and they came and asked me what I was doing, and I explained it to them, and they argued with me. And then they said, well, where are you parked? And I was parked on private property. They told me that if I didn't move my automobile, that it would be towed. And then arguing with them, I moved my automobile, and as I drove away, they stopped me, gave me a ticket for not having a seatbelt on and failing to signal, which was absolute prefabrication. I made sure I had my seatbelt on and I made sure I signaled because I knew they would be watching every move I made. And so we're going to be fighting that. We're going to court. We went to court and pled not guilty. And I have an attorney that's going to represent me. And so we're going to go fight that.
Well, I know we spoke to you a couple of months ago when there was, there was another attempt to invade the sanctuary of the church, allegedly because... Well, you told us a rather heartrending story about an individual who was a member of your sanctuary, or who'd been gotten sanctuary status in your church for a while, and then the police came in and took him away. You told us about his legal case and what happened to him.
Yeah.
You want to summarize that situation just again for those who didn't hear that? And
well, basically, he was a homeless individual that was living on the street, and he had gone to the police department, and he was previously a sex offender, and because he was a sex offender, he had to register.
Oh, and he failed to register, but they had no actual charges against him for 9 years, but based on that alone, he got some...
Based on that alone, he was arrested, taken back to court, and because it was a three-strike situation as well, he went The trial with the jury, the jury was hung, and so they couldn't convict him because he testified, as well as other people had testified, that the police had told him that if you don't have a mailing address, i.e. if you're homeless, how do you register? Because the first thing on your registration slip says name, street address. He had no street address.
Uh-huh.
He was homeless. And so the policeman said, well, if you have no street address, you can't register. So he didn't register. And then they finally later, because they caught him here, saw him at our facility on television. He was doing an interview with a TV anchor person. And so obviously he wasn't hiding. He was doing TV interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And an officer saw him, though, and reported it. And then they came, and he turned himself in. But he was arrested for violating, basically, Megan. It's a part of Megan's law that says if you're a sex offender, even though you were convicted and served all your time, you still have to register.
And even though a hung jury, you know, declined to convict him, he took a plea bargain eventually?
No, that's exactly right, because they went back to him and said, this jury was hung, but next time we'll get a jury that's on our side, and we suggest this plea bargain. Here's what we'll do. If you'll plead guilty to not registering, and we'll give you 7 years. We'll recommend a 7-year sentence, and you'll probably do about 5. And otherwise, if we do get a jury that doesn't hang and does convict you, then you could go 25 to life.
This is a man who, as far as you know, has committed no violent crimes since the incident for which he was originally convicted?
That's correct.
How long has that been?
Well, there was about from the time he got out of jail, until the time he was arrested for failing to register was about 7 years, and there was no evidence of crime anywhere in there.
Were they investigating sex crimes in which he was a suspect?
Beg your pardon?
Were they investigating sex crimes or...
No.
In which he was a suspect? Or?
No, they just saw him on TV. We had a lot of TV cameras here at that time because we were in the media, because we were being harassed, and he happened to just be standing around when a TV anchorman went up to him and said, what do you think about this? What do you think about Pastor Drake being harassed for helping the homeless? And he said, well, I think it's terrible because I'm homeless and he's helping me, and I have a place to come to eat, I have a place to come take a shower. And so he gave his testimony before the TV cameras.
And so the answer is, testify for Wiley Drake, go to jail for 4 years.
Well, yeah, exactly right. For testifying for me, he's in jail now. He's in prison now and was facing 25 to life.
So, I know in January we spoke, and you said that a judge had essentially told the police in their attempt to, want to do kind of searches of your church sanctuary, no go.
Well, in essence, what had happened is that the prosecuting attorney went back to court, asked the judge to grant a motion of change our probation order. The probation order said they could come into this one building where the people sleep and count to make sure we had no more than 52. The prosecuting attorney said to the judge, I want to be able to check all the facility, every part of the building, because we think he's hiding those that are over 52. And they took the words of people on the street that had been kicked out of our homeless shelter, because if people smoke or drink or bring dope on the property, we kick them out. We don't allow them to stay here.
You also explained that while you may have more people in the church at any one time, they aren't sleeping. They're up doing other things.
That's exactly right. But they said, no, he's lying, and we want to be able to go into the sanctuary of the church and check and see, because we know there are people in there sleeping, and we know there are people in there sleeping because we have seen through investigation, and we have seen sleeping materials in there. Well, we have a Korean congregation, and the Korean congregations use prayer mats. And what they saw were prayer mats that the Korean congregation used to pray on.
Uh-huh.
Thin foam rubber covered with material that they use as prayer mats, which is very common in Korea and here in America in the Korean congregation. And so they said they wanted to go in and catch us with people sleeping in the sanctuary.
And the judge turned that order down?
The judge turned that order down. The judge said, I will not violate a church sanctuary.
And what was the prosecutor's response to that?
But the prosecutor's response was just to go back away, and then he went then to the other city attorney, and they concocted this way to come back and arrest us, because in the meantime we had filed a civil rights lawsuit against the city, and now the city was on the defense side, And they went to, this other attorney went to the judge and said, since they filed a civil rights lawsuit against us or invading their property before, we have a right to go in and do investigation where this guy used to sleep and so forth.
Was this the same judge that turned them down in the first place?
Judge. It's a different judge because this was in the Superior Court.
So that, were they judge shopping, or was this just a sort of a different jurisdiction?
Well, it was a different judge in a different case, and of course they weren't judge shopping, I'm sure, because they knew that this judge... See, judges, typically, if you're on the defense, in other words, if someone has filed a case against you, the judge has a tendency to lean in your direction in areas of discovery and compelling and that kind of thing.
Particularly if you're the city, I guess.
Particularly if you're the city, and particularly if you, you know... you're dealing with police departments, and particularly since our lawsuit is against the police department of Buena Park.
So this second judge then granted the police the right to go into your sanctuary?
No, they did. It wasn't. They knew that the judge wouldn't automatically rubber stamp one that a previous judge had disapproved, so they couched it in different terms. What they did was, rather than ask for a change in our probation, they filed a motion to compel, which means they would compel, the judge would compel us to allow them not to come in and count people, but just to come in to do investigation.
And the investigation, again, had the purpose of
discovering information that would help them defend themselves against our civil rights case.
And what are you accusing them of in your civil rights case?
We're accusing them of violating our constitutional rights by coming on property without a search warrant and without probable cause. What they're saying is that when they arrested this man, first of all,
This is the so-called sex offender?
Yes. He was arrested somewhere else. He turned himself in across town. They arrested him, interviewed him for like 12 hours, and then after 12 hours, they said, wouldn't you like to go back to First Southern Baptist Church and pick up your belongings? And he said, yes. And so they brought him back to the church to pick up his belongings. They didn't ask us if they could do that. They just barged on property. In fact, when I asked them, I said, would you please not come on property without a search warrant or a probable cause? And they said, we don't need one. This guy lived here. He has the right to allow us to come on property. And I said, he doesn't live here. He's a homeless person that sleeps here once in a while. He has no control over this property. I'm the pastor, and the church has control of this property.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, if you don't get out of the way, you're going to get hurt. And a police officer raised a baton.
Really?
In a motion to hit me if I didn't move. And he said, if you don't get out of my way, you're going to get hurt. And they also did the same thing to a security guard and then forced their way on the property.
How many police officers?
Oh, probably 15. 10 to 15, something
this,
like that.
This sounds to me like why they may be using him to simply get at you.
Well, absolutely, no doubt about it.
Why would they send 15 police officers to help him pick up his belongings?
Well,
you got guns and militia stationed in the basement, or what?
And the fact of the matter is, had they have simply made a phone call and said, Pastor Drake, as you know, we've arrested this man, could we come by and pick up his belongings, I'd have been more than happy to give them to him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to keep the guy's belongings. All it was a duffel bag full of dirty socks and clothes and a couple of notebooks that he had written some notes in and a couple of overdue library books.
Mm-hmm.
But he was trying to make it. Then once he found out he was in trouble, he started trying to make a deal with them and tried to tell them that he had written some notes about some things that might be detrimental to us.
Hmm.
So they suspected. But while he was here, he indeed confessed to me that he was a plant by the police department.
In the sense that he actually came, he initially came to you at police department instruction?
No, he said he came to me in a confession and said that he wanted to ask me for forgiveness because he had come here under false pretense. He said, I know I came here just as a homeless person, but he said, I came here to do some writing and came here to do some investigation for the police department.
So in other words, This whole thing was sort of a sting operation against you.
Yeah, and now they've denied that, and he since has denied it as well. He since has later, because, you know, he was facing 25 years to life
mm-hmm.
to cooperate. He since later denied that he ever told me that, but he did indeed tell me that.
Now, is that kind of evidence of the confession, you know, admissible in court? I thought that, you know, I know Roman Catholic priests are not.
Well, again, he could probably claim that, but he's not yet. So far, he's just denied telling me that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not sure where that's going to come out. You know, it was not a religious confession in the sense that it was during church or that it was in my function as a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I am pastor of the church, he came to me personally.
So you're not betraying any confidences by saying that?
No, I didn't know, because he did not tell me to keep it in confidence, nor was it in a confessional situation. He simply came to me and said, man to man, person to person, I need to ask you to forgive me. I've been here under false pretense.
That would have put you in quite a bind, I imagine.
Oh, sure, it would have. It would have.
Had it been in a formal confession.
Absolutely. And of course, and that's the other thing is that there, a part of the probation, and probably one of the other reasons we're going to get in trouble is, a part of the probation was is that each Monday morning we had to send a list of those that spent the night at our church the night before on Sunday night. We had to send it each Monday. And we did that for several weeks. Until I had several people that were not only homeless, but members of my church that said, Pastor, it's a violation of my rights for you to even admit to anybody that I'm here at this church, because that's a violation of my privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Just like if I were to call up a social worker and say, I know you have a certain client, they won't even admit that he is a client.
Mm-hmm.
Or protecting their rights. And so we have since stopped sending the list on Monday morning. I've refused now to send them those lists on Monday morning.
Well, Monday morning is going to have a particular significance tomorrow. Can you
yes.
tell us why that is?
Basically at 10 o'clock, my understanding is here's what's going to happen. At 10 o'clock, they're coming with a court order in hand, a photographer, an attorney, and the police officer that was in charge the night that they violated our constitutional rights, by the way, and they're going to come here and they're going to look at and photograph the infamous patio building where we used to sleep people. We don't sleep people there anymore. Where we used to sleep people. And they want to indeed photograph a certain closet where we typically store clothing and things that people leave behind. Because on the night they, under the pretense of bringing this man back to get his belongings, when they left, they took no belongings with them.
Really? Well, why was that?
Well, they didn't find what they were looking for. They thought they were going to find some evidence
of
something he had written that could have been detrimental to us, according to them.
Well, weren't they... They weren't investigating you for a crime at that time. They were investigating him for the crime of not registering. Right?
Well, but that's what they said. But they were indeed investigating me, because when you deal with homeless people and when you deal with drug offenders and drug abusers, if you crack down on them and make them comply with rules and you make them leave the property, then they go tell stories that, well, there's a lot of drugs on that property. And
oh, I see. So that was... They weren't just having him pick up his property. They were pursuing another allegation against you for...
Yeah, and they admitted that.
I see. So now they're claiming that, what, 6 months later that the evidence will still be there?
Well, no. They know it's not there, because whatever clothing and materials that was there, we later gave up to them.
Mm-hmm.
And because we didn't have anything to hide. But now
they're claiming they're looking for him.
They're not really looking for anything. They say they are. That's how they got the judge to agree.
But what did they tell the judge they're looking for that would still be there after 6 months and that you...
The judge didn't ask. My attorney said, hey, there's nothing there. There's nothing but a closet. Why do they want to take pictures? And basically the judge said, because they're on the defense of this thing, we give them the benefit of the doubt.
I see. And so what are you going to do tomorrow at 10 o'clock, do you know?
I'm going to be here at 10 o'clock tomorrow. I am going to allow them into the patio facility, and I will allow them in the hallway to photograph that closet.
Mm-hmm.
But if they want to go into the sanctuary, that sanctuary will be locked, and my little fat body will be in front of the door.
I see.
I will not allow them to go into that church.
You have your hospital insurance paid up?
Yes.
Well,
I also will have a lot of homeless people here that will come to my aid, I'm sure.
Now, what about other churches in the area, the ACLU? Have you had any sympathetic response from them?
Other churches, I've had sympathetic response. Other churches said that they will be praying, and some of them will be here tomorrow. I feel sure we'll have several people show up tomorrow. The ACLU has basically just taken a stay away from Lottie Drake?
Probably because of, perhaps because of your controversial stands on issues that they disagree with you on.
Exactly. Exactly. And the interesting thing about it is that, that at one time they came to me saying that they wanted to get some signatures and get some people behind being against this whole concept that if a person had drug abuse in their past, they couldn't qualify for welfare.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I don't agree with the ACLU, and even though I've been outspoken against the ACLU, and obviously we don't agree on a lot of things, I signed on with the ACLU. In fact, I was criticized in the press by some of my peers that here I was having strange bedfellows with the ACLU because I agreed with them that indeed if a person has had drugs in their past, as long as they're rehabilitated and off drugs now, that should have no bearing on whether or not they get welfare or not.
Right, and we talked about that in our last interview.
What should be a bearing is that do they need the welfare, do they need the food, do they need the food stamps, not was he a drug addict 5 years ago, therefore that disqualifies him. And I said that was wrong, and I agreed with the ACLU on that.
And have they been successful in stopping that condition, or is it
I think so. I think pretty much so. I think it is still, in all honesty, I think it's still sort of on the books, but I think it's... I think it's just not being enforced.
Now, what about social service providers in Buena Park? I mean, are there any such? And I mean, are they hostile to you? Are they hostile?
Really, not anything in Buena Park, other than the city has a little thing called the Coordinating Council, and they give out some food, but they're very hostile toward us because. They disagree with what we do, and they don't like what we do because we have criticized them in all honesty because they receive federal funds, CDBG funds, which is community block grant funds, and a part of that stipulation from the federal government is that they have to use a certain amount of that for helping the homeless. And they say they help the homeless. They do have a food bank here in town, a little small food bank that's open a couple of days a week.
Mm-hmm.
But my attorney took his tie and coat off, walked over there one day, undercover. They didn't know he was my attorney. He just walked up there and said, I'm homeless and I'm hungry. Can I get some food? And they said, yeah, you have to have an address, though, in Buena Park because we only service Buena Park. And he said, well, I don't have an address in Buena Park because I'm homeless. And they said, if you don't have a proof of address in Buena Park, we can't give you food.
My, my, my.
So by the very nature of their stipulation, they are violating their, you know, federal guidelines because the federal guideline says they have to use a certain amount of that money to help the homeless.
What about your own church? I know that you were concerned at one point. I know Reverend Arnold Abbott, or I should say, I don't know if he's a reverend, but he heads Love Thy Neighbor in Florida, is it Hollywood, Florida? It's Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
He was feeding homeless people regularly for 5 or 6 years, and also insisting that homeless people be given decent places to stay, and his church pulled out right from under him when the police threatened to start arresting him for serving food to homeless people, and it really disheartened him. We had an interview with him about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Has your church stood with you? Has your the board of directors of your church, if that's what it is?
Well, in all honesty, we had a small group of deacons, a couple of deacons, and they indeed left the church. They wanted nothing to do with it. But by and large, the church members have been very supportive. And because we are a small church, it's not a board-run church. It's a democratic pastor-run church.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're very fortunate in that sense.
Well, what can people do up here in beautiful Santa Cruz?
Well,
I guess we can write you in jail or send you get well cards in the hospital.
Either one of those is certainly be appreciated. Any support that anybody would have, obviously we're all human. We love to have letters and support saying, you know, we're behind you. Obviously we could use, you know, finances. We operate on a shoestring budget. The money that the church basically pays for the utilities and my salary, all of the work that's done with the homeless here, all of the cooking, the cleaning, all of the structure is done by the homeless themselves, and no one is paid except their own room and board. And so, the church pays my salary as pastor of the church, and the church also pays all the utility bills and buys the food and everything else. And so it's a struggle day by day, but people have donated a lot of food and clothing as well as money. And
what kind of salary do you make, Wiley?
My total report this year in IRS, I think, was $45,600, something like that.
How many hours a day do you work?
Well, I'm usually here 8 to 8.
About 12 hours a day. How many days a week?
But I'm also, I live close by, so I'm on call. So, I work at least 12 hours a day, and that's a short day for me here.
So it sounds like you're, at least some people are getting value for their money in terms of what you're doing.
Well, you know, the other thing too is I pastor the church. I'm the $45,000 that the church pays me, that includes housing and everything. That's the total package. That's not cash money. That's everything.
So that's not your Tahiti vacation fund.
No, that's everything. That includes. You know, you have to claim fair rental value. The church has a house that they allow me to live in, and you have to declare fair rental value of that home as income. That's included in there. The church also pays the utilities. You have to claim that as income. That's also in there. Actually, my paycheck. And this is no secret because the records are open. My paycheck is $600 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my paycheck, that's what my take-home pay is.
Well, we're talking to Reverend Wiley Drake here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. If anyone wants to send a letter or a message of encouragement or a fat check or a thin check, send it to, give me a call at 423-HUFF. 423-4833. I'll make sure the check gets to him. Send it in cash, and I'll take my 10%, of course. Just kidding. And it really is it's encouraging, though. Some people are taking a stand, Wiley, and fighting back. Indeed, it's becoming rare. And I know that Food Not Bombs, the organization that I was working with several years ago, and it still is working around the country, to feed people on the streets and areas where, in public places, not just in, you know, sanctioned, out of sight, out of mind areas where a lot of authorities want to put homeless people.
Right.
They're under attack in different places, and, you know, you and I may not agree on other things you do and other positions you take, but on this position, you're up there with the angels, big guy.
Well, that's the beauty of America. That's the beauty of the diversity of America. You know, I am as dogmatic in areas, as you obviously aware of, that you and I would totally disagree on, as well as with a lot of other people. You know, it's just like here. I disagree, for example, with a great deal of what Reverend Jesse Jackson does, and I certainly am not one of his fans. But I praise the Lord that he was able to accomplish what he was able to accomplish yesterday.
Well, I hope that they'll stop the bombing. They just bombed a whole busload of people crossing a bridge.
Right.
Four Albanian kids died, apparently, so are severely wounded.
Well, you know, in that sense, I'm not sure I understand politically what's going on over there, and I'm not sure why we should be there and all those kind of things. You and I could probably argue that day in and day out. But the fact that we're killing children on buses, obviously we would both agree that's not good.
Right. And we certainly agree that I'm probably most people listening to this broadcast, find this whole assault on you not just preposterous, but sinister. And an example of a kind of a government power gone crazy, and a kind of really frightening kind of corruption that this would happen. I mean, they have no indication of bad treatment of homeless people, as far as I know.
Oh.
And I know that I've heard you criticize from other people that I haven't really gotten the straight dope on. I guess some social service providers in Southern California don't like you.
Well, there are always some that do not like us because, obviously, we have a religious bias. And anything we do to help, if we do not make it a requirement, but obviously, we give people food, clothing, housing. We help them with jobs. We give them automobiles. We give them everything that are the basics of life. And we don't require anything of that.
Mm-hmm.
Except...
Well, maybe you need to take in some Albanian Muslim children, and that will keep them away from your...
Now, the only requirement we have is that we have a requirement that we still remain a church and to be evangelical. So when we give you a bag of food, for example, we may put a Bible in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't say, hey, you can have this food if you'll read the Bible, but we simply give you a bag of food with a Bible in it. We may simply say that you come and eat a hot meal with us. We don't say, you've got to hear us preach.
Well, I think when the police come tomorrow and you offer them a bag of food, you might also put a copy of the Constitution in it as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you, Wiley Drake, for being with us on the air today, and I expect if you can, we'll try to contact you tomorrow, or maybe you can contact us and let us know what happened.
If this thing heats up, I may not be able to make but one phone call, and that, of course, will be my attorney.
Well, then we'll have to find out. Thank you, Wiley.
Certainly. We'll certainly try to get in touch with you.
Golden-tongued Carol Denny from Failure to Disperse, her cool tape, one that we just don't have enough of. Now we're going to talk to Kate Wells.
Hi there, Kate.
Hello.
And you are live on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, semi-alive anyway.
I hope so. Well, I know we had a great interview with you about a week ago in which you talked about you talked a little bit about the plight of Jerry Henry.
Uh-huh.
I think you talked about a number of concerns you had about the law, new recent court decisions. And I know that on Thursday, just at the very end of our show, Dennis Rehm came in, the homeless person who lives in his vehicle, who you were helping fight a failure to pay warrant.
Right.
And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that for us, because...
Well, let me give you the update on Jerry Henry first, because that was a sweet victory and something that shows that when we do, in fact, have an impartial trier of fact, the system does still work. We had our DMV hearing on Monday.
Now,
as you recall...
Give a little background. Jerry Henry is a sort of a spiritual counselor for young people in Aptos who, as a consequence of advising young people of their rights, has been mercilessly harassed by the new sheriff's...
Arrested repeatedly.
Substation
for
there.
Trespassing in public. All of the charges ultimately dropped. They have been trying to get rid of him, get him to basically just leave Rancho Del Mar for eons now. We're talking years now.
And the most recent move they had was to suspend his driver's license
right.
on absolutely no evidence whatsoever. Right?
Sergeant Hemingway, who is now head of the Aptos substation, evidently notified the DMV that he felt that Jerry's was a danger on the road and that his driver's license should be suspended summarily for due to mental disorder is what they put on there. Jerry has an absolutely spotless driving record. He is probably the most conscientious driver I know. He actually drives me nuts because he he goes, you know, the speed limit all the time. I mean, he's just a very, very, very conscientious driver.
And moreover, Kate, wasn't this also a reaction, not just part of the ongoing campaign against Henry, but Hemingway apparently was upset
by
Henry's issuing a flyer which revealed Hemingway's extracurricular masturbatory activities at the...
At a porn theater in, I think it was in Monterey County.
Not that I have anything against masturbation or porn theaters. No.
But when you hold yourself out to be some sort of moral leader for the community and you're actually dealing with the children of many prominent people in Aptus, he just thought that everybody ought to be on an even playing ground and know what they were dealing with.
Wasn't Hemingway attacking and the others in the sheriff's substation attacking Jerry Henry as some sort of pervert in private phone calls to
calling parents in
parents
and telling
the
them
kids
that
Jerry advised?
Exactly. So,
let me just say this, Kate, before you continue, that I think Sergeant Hemingway's radical new stance is really not a bad one. That I think police officers standing up for masturbation and porno movies could really strike a trend, and I would support such a thing.
Right. Well, I do too, but I also support Jerry's right to do what he was doing, which is informing the public of a public event.
So anyway, Hemingway
at any rate, so they summarily suspended his driver's license, which effectively, since he lives, in the middle of nowhere, out in the Nicene Marks Forest, they were well aware of the fact that this would, in fact, make it impossible for him to do his street ministry, as well as feeding of the homeless, which he has been doing for quite some time now. So at any rate, the first when I called for a hearing with the DMV, they told me it wouldn't be till July. When I argued that this was an outrage because of the political circumstances, we were given a hearing last Monday, in fact, and
which was much expedited, right?
Much expedited, April 26th instead of a July hearing, yeah.
But he had still been without his ability to drive for how long?
3 weeks, or actually almost a month.
And I'm sure that the police department, once it was reversed, as I'm sure it was going to pay him for all those bus fares and taxi fares.
Right. At any rate, when we got to the hearing, we showed the evidence we had as far as what Sergeant Hemingway had accused Jerry of doing, which was parking in a red zone, which he was parking in a red zone to give, on a pouring rain day, to give food to a person who was not only homeless but disabled, walks on two crutches. And when Hemingway came out and demanded that he leave, Jerry said, well, you know, he wanted to give the food to the person before he left, and that was the incident that evidently prompted this.
I think it's clear evidence of mental disability.
Mental disorder accusation. So we compiled photographs of people parked in that red zone, including commercial trucks there delivering stuff with their, you know, ramps out, and First Alarm parked in the red zone. Regular old vehicles parked in the red zone. I mean, we literally had hundreds of pictures of people parked in that red zone. And so Hemingway, we did subpoena to the hearing. Hemingway showed up and he was shaking so hard that both the hearing officer and myself noticed it, at which point he assured us that he was just on medication for his sinus.
Was he piss tested at that point, or?
Pardon?
Was he piss tested at that point?
No, he wasn't. However, he was wearing his gun, and we did notice that as he walked out of the DMV, he climbed into his patrol car.
I see.
He was shaking so hard that at the end of the hearing officer said to me, you know, he was shaking so hard he made me nervous.
Well, perhaps he should have moved to have his driver's license suspended.
Well,
for
I'm going to be making an internal affairs complaint at this point.
Good luck.
The man just did not appear to be in any shape to be driving, let alone carrying a gun. At any rate, at the end of the hearing officer said that he was going to do something he'd never done before, and he picked up the telephone, called Sacramento, and said, I want this man's license reinstated now.
Wow.
He said they should be pinning a medal on you, Mr. Henry. for all of the work you've done for the homeless, asked whether or not he could, in fact, come down to volunteer to help him in feeding the homeless.
Amazing.
It was astounding. I mean, it was such a beautiful victory. He saw right through everything that Hemingway was saying. You know, it was obviously clear to him that this was a political move, and that the DMV was actually being used by Sergeant Hemingway to carry out his little personal vendetta against Jerry Henry.
Now, was Hemingway there alone, or did he have his counsel with him, or what happened?
Hemingway was there alone. Hemingway was there alone at our subpoena. We actually subpoenaed him.
Mm-hmm.
Later that same day, oh gosh, this is going to get into something. Have you had anything about Quigley and the restraining order?
We had Richard Quigley, who's a Libertarian Party, well, he's a Libertarian activist. He's not a member of any Libertarian Party.
Freedom fighter.
He's a freedom fighter, and he, from the Fuck War t-shirts of 1990,
mm-hmm.
for which he was thrown out of the farmer's market,
mm-hmm.
to the helmet cases where he has stood up for the rights of people to, you know, cover or not cover their heads, to the take me to a magistrate defense, to harassment by police, to, I guess, Jerry Henry and standing up for his rights to counsel young people about their rights.
Absolutely.
You know, in the Aptos Shopping Center. He's really been on the front lines. He did speak on the air on Thursday briefly, but we didn't really get a chance to get into it. Perhaps you should, you know, cover that as
well.
Was
this before or after he was arrested?
It was after he was arrested,
okay.
And after he had to post his own bail,
mm-hmm.
and I think he briefly discussed the fact that, he said some things in confidence that I can't tell you about, but that indicated to me that there are some people in the police department, the sheriff's office, that feel he's definitely getting a bad rap, and that there is a small band of bad officers who you know, are taking out on him his attempt to do the job that Sheriff Tracy should be doing.
Right.
Clean up his own department.
Well, the latest update on that is that after his arrest for supposedly parking within 25 yards of...
Let me summarize that briefly.
Yeah.
Apparently he got a restraining order a year and a half ago because Gottschalk's, one of the stores the manager of Gottschalk's went out onto the sidewalk and told him he couldn't be on the sidewalk, which of course was preposterous.
Told him to leave.
And he responded to her in colorful language, you know, get the fuck away from me.
Right, get the fuck away from me, you fat bitch.
Yeah, something to that effect. And you know, as a consequence, she was able, through our a supine court system, to get a court order barring him from being within 25 feet of her car.
25 yards.
Yards of her car.
Or her.
And he obeyed the order for a year and a half. There was no problem. Then she apparently came in and parked her car,
mm-hmm.
near his car. He didn't even know what her car looked like, he said.
Right.
Although that's kind of strange. If it was for a year and a half, I certainly would find out what the car looked like.
No, he
Richard
didn't want to know
together.
For fear that they would accuse him, in case it was vandalized or something, that they would accuse him.
Right.
Right.
But how could they prove he didn't know what it looked like?
Exactly,
I don't know. You know, that's sort of a strange defense. But anyway, so he was essentially innocently having a cup of coffee when he was, you know, dragged off to jail for supposedly...
Well, believe it or not, they actually dragged out a tape recorder. Measuring tape. And ascertained that his car was, in fact, 57 feet away from her car instead of 75 feet away, and they hauled him off to jail.
A clear violation,
And
he then had to post, what, 5,000, 10,000, how much?
Well, $2,500, actually.
$2,500 bail.
But still, that's enough, I mean, for an indigent, which he is. At any rate, we have since found out that was directly at Hemingway. Hemingway has issued a memo stating that he has advised her that she should park her car in front there instead of in the employee parking lot.
I see. So as
knowing,
to criminalize Richard wherever he parks around
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Knowingly. Yeah. And now she's claiming that he's been following him, you know, which is absolutely ludicrous.
She's been claiming that Richard Quigley has been following
him. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and the one episode she claims is an episode where she he evidently, not knowing her car again, parked next to her at the Capitola Mall, and actually I have something to do with this because he was going to get food for us for dinner.
He actually lives in the same area as you, right?
Absolutely, and so he went over to get food for us at the food court at the mall, and unbeknownst to him, parked next to her car. So she evidently saw his car and got out her trusty camera and photographed the whole thing, and then claimed that he was following her. Well, you know, he went over there to get food and came back. He was gone maybe 15 minutes, you know. She even claims in there, she's so paranoid, she even claims in there that the only reason that he didn't follow her any further is that he saw her lift her phone to dial 911.
I see.
You know, she's got a really unhealthy obsession with Richard, at any rate.
Well, what are the judges likely to do with
Well, that's the update I have.
Ah,
he took it in Friday on a restraining order, stating that, that if this was going to continue to happen to him, there had to be, because, oh, I forgot to say that the judge made it clear that this restraining order did not apply to the sidewalk at Rancho Del Mar, that he had every right to be in front of Gottschalk's, handing out flyers, doing whatever he did in front of that whole area down at Rancho Del Mar, that he could not interfere with his right to be on the public sidewalk along there, and therefore,
well,
you
did it apply to inside the coffee
the,
roasting
can't
company?
Go in, no, not inside the roasting company, but he can't go inside of Gottschalk's.
I see.
The interior of the store of Gottschalk's is off limits.
Well, wasn't he arrested on Sunday or Monday for being for sitting in, you know, I guess it's for his car being near her within 57 feet. That was the reason, or was he?
Right,
yeah.
Right. But, well, and I guess he was in his car or something. I mean, off and on, at least, he was in his car. We're not sure yet whether or not she moved her car to be within in that range of him, or whether or not he came up later inadvertently.
Do you
and
think this
her.
Is her way of really just trying to get Richard to notice her, maybe invite her out on a date?
We've speculated about this. We really have speculated, yeah. At any